Welcome to the Aftershock Central Podcast. You like my sound effects?
Was that an aftershock?
Yeah, it was an aftershock. Sounded more like a nuclear explosion or a fart. But we're here to talk about some Aftershock comics. Is Witch Hammer out yet? God damn it.
Witch Hammer isn't out until the 21st, sir.
Yeah, it's a couple weeks, I know. I know. Anyways, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about new books that came out on whatever day today is, or yesterday. December 5th.
The 5th.
Yes, books that came out December 5th, because we're all cut up like good boys. Joining me on this podcast is the sultry sounds of Ronnie Barron and the avocado-filled mouth of Travis Williams.
I can't be sultry because that's Nick.
Oh yeah, Nick sultry. That's true. I can't use that.
And I can't compare it to Nick.
The Long Island iced tea filled mouth of Ronnie Barron. How's that? Is that
sweetness.
Better? Yes. Yeah. I haven't had one of those in a long time, dude.
I've had two, so I'm making up for both of us.
There you go.
You're from Long Island, right, Martin?
You shut your damn mouth. I'm from New York City, like a true red-blooded New York American. Not that Long Island stuff.
You're thinking of Aaron. Close. Aaron's from Hoboken, so.
Yes. Anyways, do we have any news?
No news.
Wah, wah. Well, good. No news is good news. Let's talk about some books. We are going to kick it off talking about Her Infernal Descent, number 5. From Nadi Ladler, Zach Thompson. I don't even know what I just said. Let's start that over. Lonnie Nadler and Zach Thompson. Art Ian Marin. Colors by D. Cuniff. Letters by Marshall Dillon. Great cover by Carl Charles. Now, question for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
This is a different artist. Did you guys think it looked any different?
I didn't notice.
I think the artist switched after 3. So I think Ian did 4 and 5, if I'm not
mistaken.
Yeah,
I didn't notice.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
Yeah, maybe just with, like, the colors and, you know, everything, you know, they kept it consistent, you know, like it felt cohesive.
Mm-hmm.
They did a good job.
I agree. So this wraps up the 5-issue series of what many people call slightly pretentious. I will agree, because it kind of is, but that's why I like it, because I like pretentious stuff.
It's not slightly. It is pretty pretentious.
I think it depends on your definition of pretentious, though, right? I think pretentious gets thrown around a lot. I think in particular with, like, our circle, Ronnie.
Oh, okay.
Right? Because, mm-hmm. like, Mike says it all the time.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. But it's only pretentious because, like, it expects the reader to know certain things to understand what the story's about, right? And I think if you don't know those things or understand those things, then automatically you see it as slightly pretentious.
Yeah.
And of course, it doesn't help that you have, like, poets and writers coming in and speaking in verse and stuff like that. So it does make it a little more highbrow, I would say. I think maybe that's...
Pinkies up.
Yeah. Oh, pinkies up. I would say
highbrow.
Yeah,
but, like... Etrigan speaks in rhyme. You could speak in rhyme. That doesn't make it pretentious.
I guess. You don't think when Etrigan talks, it sounds a little pretentious? Have you ever met anyone that walks around town just speaking in rhyme?
No, but that would be awesome.
Yeah, like Andre the Giant from The Princess Bride.
Yeah.
Anybody
want a peanut?
I was thinking a little lowbrow, and I don't know if you guys ever saw that episode of Family Guy when Peter has his own theme music. Did you guys ever see that?
Yeah.
So every time he walks into a room, the theme music comes on, and he, like, straps a device on himself so it looks like he's always looking through a TV. I don't know. It was pretty funny. But that's kind of what it reminds me of. All right, so we get to meet Lucifer. Hail yourself. Mm-hmm. We get to meet Lucifer. He's kind of, I don't know. How would you describe him? He's kind of funny.
Yeah. I like the part where he was talking about, like, he's kind of like, what'd you think? Like, was it okay? Did I go too modern? I got to keep up with the times.
Yeah, I dug that. He might be my favorite character in this whole series, actually. But, yeah, he was pretty funny. And I like that whole thing. because of like the kind of thing that he was trying to say about this place, right? And we talked a little bit, what was that, issue 3, when we met the angels that were building that like condo or whatever. And we were wondering like, well, is God building stuff here, or like what the hell's going on? It seems like maybe that's not the case at all. Because funny enough, the devil doesn't believe in God, right? And that comes up as part of the conversation, right? He's like, I'm the first atheist. And I was like, oh, that's pretty funny. I like that.
Well, I mean, it's kind of true if you think about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like on the nose.
Which he doesn't have. So that is extra funny. I dug that. I think that the rest of the issue kind of just felt pretty straightforward. I would say this might be the most straightforward of all the issues of the series. I didn't really see anything that was like, oh, like, what does that mean? Do I need to go look it up? Like, where is this referenced in Inferno, or, you know, things like that. It seemed mostly straightforward. And I like that. I think it's a good way to kind of end the whole story. Although I'm not sure if I know exactly what happened to the family. Did I miss it? Because I read this twice, and I don't think I missed it. But did they ever say?
You're like how they died?
Yeah.
Yeah, in this issue they said that what's her name, Lynn, was supposed to pick the kids up from the ice skating rink, but she was passed out drunk, so her husband went, even though he was exhausted, and got into a car crash, and they all died that way.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of interested in what to make of how it's all going on. You know, maybe you can help me out, because it seems like this whole endeavor was kind of a test for Lynn, and it was almost framed like the family kind of set it up and basically made this wager, like, okay, she's gonna succeed, make it through, push through her pain and kind of move on to the next thing.
Right.
And if she doesn't, then we'll like stay in hell, even though we weren't supposed to be here. Was that kind of your understanding?
No, I think you read more into it than what it actually means. Cause I think the way the final interaction goes between Lynn and her family and Satan is more like, Lynn realizing that her family's not really in hell, and she didn't actually travel to hell. It was more of the process of coming to terms with the grieving process. I mean, the title of the issue is acceptance, right? So that's the final step of this, you know, 5-step process of dealing with death and loss and grief. I think each of the issues actually was named after one of the steps. And it says at the end that, like, something to the effect of, like, there's no, like, real hell. It's just, like, the circumstances that you put yourself in makes you create, like, your own personal hell. And with her coming to accept the fact that, you know, her being drunk wasn't, like, her family dying because she was drunk wasn't her fault, right? Like, if she had been driving, then yes, it would have been her fault, right? But she was passed out. And it's just one of those things where, like, it was a freak accident. She shouldn't blame herself just because she was passed out.
Yep. That's how I took it too.
Mm-hmm. Which is surprising.
It was bound to happen anyways.
Right. But I think that resolution to me was surprising because of the highbrow aspect of much of the series, right? Whereas, you know, to reiterate, I felt this was a lot more straightforward than the rest of it was.
Yeah, it was definitely a lot more straightforward, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they had to kind of wrap it up and like have it make sense, right?
Sure, so. Yeah.
So they're probably not trying to throw too many curveballs in the last issue when you're trying to tie things up.
Yep.
Cool. I just wasn't sure whether to take it as the metaphorical thing about kind of making your own hell versus you know, something that's more literal.
Yeah, I think it's somewhere in between though, Travis. Because I mean, she makes her grief a literal hell, but I don't think she ever actually goes to hell. You know what I mean? Like, I'm still kind of convinced that this just happens in her head.
Yeah. Like, this is, yeah, definitely. Like, this is her penance to herself, like, where she has to suffer all the time about it.
Yep.
Kind of like Heroes in Crisis style. Mm. Only this has resolution.
Well, I mean, that book's only 3 issues in.
I know.
Yeah. That's a good book, by the way.
Yep.
All right. Let's rate it up. I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. I think it's a good conclusion.
I'll go 4 out of 5 also. And I think I'm going to go 4.5 out of 5 for the whole series.
I agree with that as well.
I think I will go 4 out of 5 as well. And let's add that I thought it was kind of an interesting coincidence that they take a little shot at George Bush Sr. in this issue. And same week he died.
Yeah, yeah. That's some timing. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Just interesting.
Yep. Cool. All right, Ronnie.
I am going to go with... You're thinking I'm going to go with one, but I'm going to go with the other. So I'm going Moth and Whisper number 4.
Nope, that's exactly what I thought you were going to pick. Because that is actually the next one I had up. It's written by Ted Anderson. We've got art by Jen Hickman, letters by Marshall Dillon, logo by Jared Fletcher. All right, so what about this book? What did you like or dislike about it?
Well, I've liked this series from the beginning. And it's kind of like what we assumed the last issue, like where Wolf is still the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And Nikki was caught up in their emotions so much that there was no other option than what Wolf was telling them.
Right.
And now they found the mole. That's pretty crazy.
I love that. It's called their name. Because it's hard to determine if it's a man or a woman. We'll go with there also.
Yeah.
But I like that his or her name is also the mole, because he is literally a mole in a federal building.
Yeah. And I kind of like the mask where it did the self-defense thing.
Mm, yeah.
At the beginning.
Yep.
And then Nikki had to activate it for the temporary user part. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then the big ending, where obviously the video that got played back it was basically taken out of context, right?
Yep.
The first time. So, which a lot of things are, no matter what, it's what comes before and after. I mean, everybody does cherry picking of something.
Yeah, that's why I thought it was perfect, because it's kind of like the fake news argument, right? Because you can literally just make any video or any like recorded conversation mean anything you want nowadays.
Well, not just media, but like written stuff too, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. So, what do you guys think was the job that the Whisper did for Wolf? Do you think that's like significant, or does it not matter?
I don't think the job itself is significant, but them having to do the job to get the faces.
Mm-hmm.
Because then that means that the Wolf has one up on them, because he knows what those faces are.
Right.
Yeah, he's like, I'll take good care of them. And sure enough, he releases them when they're trying to catch them after they escape. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder, just because like he makes reference kind of to how extraordinary of like a steep payment these 6 fake identities are. So I wonder if that means that it was a very significant job, but that's all.
Yes. Yes.
Well, I mean, for them, they had to swallow their quote unquote pride anyways to do the job for him anyway. So he was one up anyways, just having them work for him for one. So it could have even been something small, but to him, it was a big win, no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's like having your enemy come and ask you for help.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Even if, you know, you're like, give me a dollar, at least, you know, you have something over them.
Yes.
Sure.
Didn't you guys ever read, what's the Chinese book? The Art of War?
Art of War?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's in The Art of War, the whole thing about the enemies. Matter of fact, you have that saying, right? Keep your friends close and your enemies closer.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, makes perfect sense. Yeah, I liked it. I liked the turn. I think we kind of expected that they couldn't have just done this job to do a job, right? And I think it definitely explained a lot of what's going on and how Wolf was able to catch Nikki so easily, because he's the one that created the identities. So, yeah.
I'm still not convinced that the son is good, though.
The mob boss's son.
Yeah.
Right.
Because, like, when Nikki's talking to the mole, like there's a couple of panels where it almost looks like when he's changing, he's eavesdropping on them, mm-hmm. talking about stuff. And then, you know, through a lot of the stuff, they're just like, he's off in the background eavesdropping or pretending not to care. So I don't know. Maybe it doesn't matter, but because that one panel, let me see if I can find it.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. When they're
where he's putting the shirt on.
Yep, that's the one.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I don't know if it would directly impact this particular series, but if there is a volume 2, then I could see that kind of playing into that story, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it also seems like right now, with them being in the belly of the beast and having actual proof that Wolf lied to them, like it could be... The mobster's son is in a pretty good spot, though, right? Because mm-hmm, mm-hmm. he could turn the tables.
Well, yeah, because now he knows Nikki's like fake identities and their real identity.
Yeah, and where the mole's at.
Right.
That nobody else even knows.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that seems odd, right? Because, I mean, Nikki's got to really trust this guy. And, I mean, he's gained Nikki's trust pretty quickly. It seems like it could be a mistake in the end for Nikki.
Yeah, right.
Unless there is some kind of like romantic involvement, which, I mean, I guess is possible. I think, Ronnie, you talked about that with the last issue.
Mm-hmm.
But what's the value of Nikki to, like, Waverly's dad, whatever his name is, you know? She kind of is new on the scene, hasn't really done that much, so I'm not sure what value she and, the mole would have to, like, that crime family.
Well, I mean, the technology, for one.
Okay.
And information.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, they're criminals, so... Okay. If the mole is able to hide in this federal building where nobody knows that the mole's there, because they kind of rigged the blueprints of the building, so it's like a secret floor. Which, by the way, that seems really weird, right? Like, wouldn't somebody be like, oh, the blueprints say it's 12 floors and there's 13, huh?
Yeah.
It's huge, dude. That space is the size of a building.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I think it's about information, and really the whole book's about information, right?
Yeah,
about finding information and keeping information secret and leveraging information to do particular things. So, information is very important, especially when
knowledge is power.
That's right. All right, so I'm assuming the next issue is the final issue where Nikki and Waverly will go up against Ambrose. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. I was wondering if it was 5 or 6,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of Aftershock ends in 5. So
yeah, do you think that Nikki's parents will show back up, or are they dead?
Actually, that's who I thought was going to be in this room.
Oh yeah, I thought that too.
And then it ended up not being them. So, mm-hmm. or at least one of them, if not both of them.
Yeah, I thought that too until it was like, who the hell are you? And I was like, oh, no, that can't be them.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's like one of the central intrigues this whole time, right? Is kind of what happened to them, and she's on the trail of that.
Yeah.
So she'll find out that they're dead or that they've been hiding somewhere.
See, I think here's my crazy theory. You ready?
Yep.
I think the mob boss's son, what's his name, Waverly?
Yep.
Is that right? Will betray Nikki and give Wolf the one up, like I alluded to earlier. But then when it seems like all is lost, then Mom and Dad will come in and save the day. Mm-hmm. And then we'll all be super spies hiding together, one big happy family.
What if, yes, I like it. So what if they disappeared as a test for Nikki?
Oh, some Hard Knock Life type style?
Yeah. Like, let's see if Nikki's ready to do what we do.
Wow, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just needed a break, dude. You know how it goes. Well,
maybe they want to retire, man, you know? It's got to be tough to, like, not have an identity, right? To have to be something else all the time. All right, let's rate it up. Ronnie, you go first.
Like every issue that came before it, 5 out of 5.
Travis?
I'll go 4.25 out of 5.
Oh, man. Now I feel like Travis usually does. I'm going to rate this lower than you guys. And I'm going to go with a 4 out of 5. Shame on me. I know.
It's okay.
It's a great book, and 4 is a fantastic score.
Yeah, definitely.
Just 5.
It's respectable.
5 is an extra special score, and as good as it was, I cannot give it a 5. All right, Travis, you're up.
You got to keep it real, dude.
Yeah, keep it gangsta. That's what I say.
Yeah. And in spirit of keeping it real, let's do Dark Arc.
All right. Dark Arc number 12, Landfall. Written by Cullen Bunn, art by Juan Doe, letters by Ryan Hill, logo by John Hill. And tell me about this book, Travis.
Okay, so I thought the most interesting thing about this issue was a couple things, kind of circling around Shrey a little bit, because he's on the boat and the monsters are talking amongst themselves, and they're kind of saying, like, to themselves that he seems to be losing his powers. Mm-hmm. And this is also coming at a time when he's having a side conversation with maybe the devil or one of his underlings. And the devil is saying, like, well, you know, like we get to land and you're free of your obligation. You're going to go your own way. But I got to tell you, I don't think it's going to go good for you. Mm. You know, you're going to regret this. And, you know, I wonder if that's just that the monsters, having lived on the ship kind of under his like heel or whatever, you know, like he's at the very least the boss man, you know, like, are they going to come after him? And now he is defenseless.
Yeah, I'm trying to find the line, because there was I think it started popping up right before that section that you're talking about, Travis, and it might be when the monsters are talking, but there was something to the effect of, like, not only God abandoning people, but the devil abandoning him as well. I gotta find this line. Ronnie, why don't you talk about this book while I find this?
All right, I really thought it was real interesting too. Like Travis was saying, it seems like all the pieces are starting to align themselves, or not really align, but come together, so that way they can make their move, whatever one that is. Like the monsters want to make their move on Shrey, and Shrey and his family just want to get to land, so that way Lucifer, Satan, whoever he's talking to, whoever his master is, mm-hmm. lets them know that they can just go and buy a house or have land or whatever.
Yeah.
And basically, quote unquote, live happily ever after, but it won't go the way that he thinks it will. And then, like the actual monsters are ready to feast and eat the leftover humans, mm-hmm. if that makes. And, I thought that was really cool of Vex to come in there and kind of take control again, even though they didn't like him. But then he kind of throws his weight around again and gets them under control.
Yeah, and that's the exact part that I was looking for. So Nick says, during the flood, God abandoned his creations. Now that the waters recede, the demons abandon their own children. We are stronger and no longer need them. But Shrey without his masters is but a man. By the time we reach land, he will be no better than any other human. And when we find him in such a state, we will make sport of him. So it seems like maybe Shrey didn't actually have any powers until the devil approached him to build the Dark Arc. And now that they've reached Landfall, and he has saved these monsters, the devil has no use for him anymore. And so as a result, he's going to take his power back from Shrey.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the thing is, we've never seen the actual deal they made, right? So maybe that's the deal, right? And you always see this in, like, folklore and stuff, where people make deals with, like, the devil or a demon or whatever, and for usually fame or money. And mm-hmm. there's always, like, a little catch, right? Like, you don't read the fine print in the contract because you just want the thing that you want, and you're willing to do whatever. But there's always some kind of fine print, and maybe that's the fine print here.
Like the deal at the crossroads.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so the deal for Shrey would be to have his family saved.
Yep.
And that's kind of like the fine print, is that his family's actually saved, but his wife isn't how she was anyway.
Well, not just his wife, but everybody, right? Because, like, his son and his wife have to deal with the consequences of, you know, their mom sacrificing herself to save their baby.
Right.
Yeah, the mom is a vampire now. What's the girl that Kroll's obsessed with? The daughter?
Janice, something
with a J. Like, she's going to be kind of effed up too, right? Because, I mean, yeah. She's had to deal with, like,
the feeding people to
the monsters. Yeah, exactly. But also forming, like, personal relationships with them, right? So that makes it extra hard.
Yeah.
Dude, like, actually, Janice seems fine. I think Kaylee's acting
Kaylee, weird. That's the one. Kaylee's a daughter.
That's Shrey's daughter, right?
Yeah, Kaylee's a daughter.
Something's up with her.
Yeah. She's really up. So that's what I'm saying. Like, the deal was maybe to save them, but at what cost, right?
Yeah.
And this is like a theme of post-apocalyptic movies of all sorts.
Yeah.
Like, how do you deal with the repercussions of what you have to do in order to survive? And can you deal with those repercussions? Because some people just can't, and they go batshit crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We see it in Animosity the whole time, or all the time.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Go ahead, Travis.
I was just kind of saying, like I don't know that the devil necessarily could foresee all of the, like, the different misfortunes that would happen to Shrey's family specifically, right? Because I think that would, you know, imply that the demons or monsters don't have free will.
Well, I think, wouldn't it imply that the monsters and demons do, though? Because if you put lots and lots of monsters on this very small, confined area, and then you have, you know, just a handful of humans, those humans aren't going to be the same when they got aboard that boat than when they got off that boat.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? As to where, like, the monsters can be monsters no matter what, because they're monsters.
Yeah, I think I know what you mean.
Also, free will is an illusion.
Yeah. But we haven't even talked about the end, though.
Yeah, let's get to that.
Yeah. Okay, did you guys notice that the mosquito guy who ate it, he keeps talking about the first, like, after he got shot? Mm-hmm. He's like, it's the first, or the first, right? Do you think that the monsters are called the first?
No, he's saying not the first. Like, they're not the first on that land.
Right.
Okay.
Like,
they're not the
first. Yeah. Like, well, he's, like, not the first, because, which he wouldn't be anyways, because Kroll bounced before he did. But, you know, for him, it was like, I'm hurrying up and getting out of here. But and then all of a sudden, you know, he's getting shot, and he's like, oh, no, we're not the first, not the first.
Mm-hmm. Now, are these creatures monsters, demons? Are they human?
We don't know yet, right?
We don't.
I mean, I'm going to assume that they're something else, because it doesn't seem like they ever left, and they have, like, a big stone temple there.
Yes.
So I'm guessing they've been there for quite a while.
Yeah. It's kind of like what was in the news, like, the last 2 weeks, right? Where the the guy went to the isolated island to spread Christianity. Oh,
the Sentinel Island? Yeah, that guy's an idiot.
Yeah, but I'm saying it's kind of like that, right? Because they're coming to a new land, and then, you know, the mosquito guy's the one that took the arrows this time.
Yep. Did you hear about this, Travis?
No. Wait, maybe.
All right, so.
It sounds familiar.
So there's an island. It's like somewhere in the ocean near India.
Yeah, it's about the size of Massachusetts.
Yeah, like, it's a pretty big island. And I think it's actually a group of islands. These people, they're called the Sentinelese, because it's North Sentinel Island. There's like 50 people that live on this island, and they have never had contact with other people, because anytime anybody tries to go on this island, they kill them. So nobody's ever had contact with them. And a couple weeks ago, this guy who, where was he? He was trained in, like, it wasn't Missouri, it was Kansas. He was a missionary. He had gone to school in Kansas to be a missionary, And he's like, I'm going to spread the gospel. I'm going to go to Sentinel Island and teach these people about Jesus. And he went, and they, like, shot an arrow through his Bible. So, like, he dipped out. But then he came back, and this time, like, they didn't hit the Bible. They hit him in the face. So, like, the dude's dead on the island. And, of course, nobody goes there, partially because it's illegal to go to this island.
Right? Because, like, even if we would go there or invade there, like, they haven't been to any other civilization forever. Mm-hmm. They're, like, the most isolated civilization left on Earth. And so, like, diseases or a common cold would kill them.
Yep, yep. Yeah, that guy's an idiot.
But, I mean, that's what I was just saying, that, like, kind of that's what this reminded me of. I don't know if it was because it was in the movie or not. But so do we think that these masked people are actually demons or, like, archangels or –
Nah, bro. I think they're Atlanteans.
Oh.
I mean, I don't know if they're necessarily human.
Right.
But I think, like, this is an old civilization that hasn't had contact with anybody else, right? So the monsters don't know anything about it. The humans don't know anything about it. But they've been there, I mean, obviously for a long time, right? I mean, you mentioned they have this temple on the island.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm looking forward to learning more about them. And what I think is interesting is it adds a new twist to the story, right? Because now that they make landfall, the monsters can go their own way, the humans can go their own way, and then things can get kind of back to normal where the monsters kind of horrify people and eat them and people do their people thing and raise animals and whatever. But right. Now they can't really do that because they sort of have a common enemy now that's not each other.
Right.
Right? Because now they have to survive against whatever these things are on this island.
Yep. I like that idea.
Yep. If they stay there. I mean, they might not even stay there. Good stuff. All right. Let's rate it up. Travis.
I will go 4.5 out of 5. I liked it a lot.
I will agree with you. And I will also go 4.5 out of 5. Also, I love the art because it reminds me of, like, Saturday morning cartoons. Like, in a good way.
And I will give it the trifecta of 4.5 out of 5.
Fantastic. All right, that leaves one book, and that book is Clan Killers, number 5. This is written by Sean Lewis with art by Antonia Fuso, colors by Stefano Simeone, and letters by Dave Sharp. Yeah. Where do I want to start with this book? So, okay, we talked a lot about just what the hell's happening with all these characters, right? And mm-hmm. I think that we finally learned in this issue that, what's her name? It's not, what do I want to say, Flynn? It sounds like
Finn.
Fiona.
It's Finn.
Finn, that's why. Yeah. Finn is possessed by Balor. And that's the reason that she has been acting the way she's been acting for the last couple of issues. It also seems, I don't know if it's explicitly told, but it also seems that Balor favors Finn now over her father, and that's why she's able to overcome her father and basically dispatch him.
Mm-hmm.
And so the harpies come in and do their – not they're not harpies. What are they? The sirens.
Banshees.
Or
banshees. Yeah.
All the same thing from different places in the world. The banshees come in and do their singing, their shrieking. That they're known for, and that is some kind of magical incantation that kind of helps Finn get rid of the spirit of Balor, and she kind of, like, throws up black smoke, and Balor exits her, and she's back to normal, and kind of loves her friend, what's his name, Cillian?
Cillian, yeah.
But, of course, I don't know if they mention it. They don't say he's gay, but he's got, like, no sexual urge. So they're just, like, friends. They have a good old time walking through the Irish countryside.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would just clarify, like, my reading of it was that the thing that cured Finn was getting hit in the head with a rock. But they kind of made reference to, like, just a blow to the head would do it, so... Kind of a shame in that sense that they never tried doing that to Patrick when he was alive.
Yeah.
But did they want to, though?
Okay, well, like, it's kind of all about Finn's, like, quest for revenge, right? You know? And, like, that became, like, her obsession, the thing that took her over and became Balor. So, like, I guess I'm wondering what really specifically Patrick did, you know? Like, clearly he's abusive.
I wasn't even sure about that, though, because I would assume that Balor would only inhabit Finn because of this anger. But the anger is not necessarily Finn, because she's a little kid. I mean, how old is she? She's got to be like 13.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there's no way she's got this fighting ability at 13. And I mean, I don't know. Maybe back in the Middle Ages, you know, kids were like super warriors. But well, 13
was pretty old back then.
Yeah,
I mean, didn't the king, like, wasn't he like, oh no, but I'm going to raise this girl, like, under my wing, kind of?
Yeah.
Like that, I thought that he was, like, taught her to be a warrior and stuff.
Even then, though, dude, like, he's a full grown man. You know what I'm saying? And she's this, like, tiny little thing.
Yeah.
It just seems to me like, were it not for the fact that Balor inhabited her, she would not have the ability that she has shown throughout this whole thing. And I mean, at some point, it's kind of comedic, and I think some of it is meant to be comedic. Like when they're fighting Callahan or whatever, the guy that she chops his head off, the spirit of death.
Mm-hmm.
Like that whole, whenever he shows up, that's like a comedic interaction. Right? Cause like they chop his head on purpose every time and he's just like, his head's flying off and he's making jokes.
Yeah. And then they chop his nose off.
Yeah. Then they chop his nose off.
Cause he still won't shut his mouth.
Mm-hmm. I know some people like that.
Yeah.
I work with them.
Hmm. Yep. I wanted to see Magneto be the hero in this one too, though, but he didn't really play a part at all.
Magneto?
Well, whatever the guy's name is that has the Magneto helmet.
That's her dad.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Isn't that her
That's
dad?
That's not her dad. No.
No. He's like a knight. He like carries the girls off.
Oh, that's right.
To protect them, you know, after the thing with the king.
Yeah. That's right. Magneto. I love it. Yeah, this one was also, I think, a lot more straightforward than the rest of the series.
Yep, I think so too. Kind of like in HIC, it kind of needed to wrap up what was going to happen.
Yeah. I still would like to know what happened to Finn's mom, though. Because, like, that seems to be the catalyst that started this whole revenge thing against her dad. But I don't think that's ever explained in the series.
Yeah, I agree. I was wondering the same thing.
Yep.
Well, she does have the other sister, right? So maybe Volume 2 can be about that sister.
Maybe. I don't know. The other two sisters almost seemed kind of throwaway. Because the only time they really played a big part of the story is to show that their father is a piece of garbage.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Well, it seemed like they were making a play to be taken over or something. But they just got shut down by the king super quick.
Yeah, yep.
So it fizzled, I guess.
Yes, that seems right. Anything else on this book?
I think I'm good.
Just one last thing on the art. I like some of the panel layouts or the page layouts in this issue. Because the artist played around a lot more with breaking out of just the regular panel structure. Like there's a few pages that are just like, you know, full page. I guess it's not a spread. What do you call it? Whatever it is. It's just like one panel on the page.
A splash,
yeah, sure. But the way that it's done, like it you can still break it down into panels, because you're seeing it kind of from farther out, but it's not actually broken into panels. And I like that kind of thing. Phil Hester does it a lot. We saw that a lot in Shipwreck, for example.
Yeah. Where so, there's borders, but there is no borders.
Yeah, exactly. The borders are more part of the background of what you're seeing.
Yeah.
I like that kind of thing. I'm telling you, I wouldn't mind owning some pages of this. I think the art's fantastic. All right.
Yeah.
Let's rate it up. I'm going to go with the score that I've given every other book but one and go a 4 and a 5.
Lame. But I too am gonna go with a 4 out of 5.
Lame.
I think I'll go 4 out of 5 for the issue, but a 4.5 out of 5 for the series.
Interesting.
Because I think it's, you know, super original, both visually and in terms of mythology and, you know, the stories. So I give them props for that.
I agree. I had a question too, though. Finn's got all these tattoos on her body. I assumed those tattoos would disappear when Balor exited, because those are the tattoos that Balor has.
Yeah.
I thought those were scars, dude. I thought she carved them on her body.
Oh, is that what it is?
See, I think Balor had the tattoos, but then when Balor came in to her, she carved them.
Okay, now that makes sense. Yep. Cool, dig it. Dig it.
Want to know how I got my scars?
There's been no announcement of a new volume of this, right?
Nope, not yet.
Okay, I don't think so. Cool, I dug it. I like this time period. I'm watching Nightfall, and it's really good. You guys should watch that.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the Knights Templar.
Yep.
Very good.
It's on my queue.
Yeah.
Whenever I get time.
Watch it. I think it's only 10 episodes.
Yeah, that means that I would need 10 hours, sir.
Well, I mean, you're not doing anything else. What are you waiting on?
I have a break coming up, so maybe I can do that and finally play some video games.
I recorded with Nick last night. We got done at like 11, and then I started reading Onslaught, because we talked about Onslaught. And then I was like, I'm going to go watch something before I get to bed. And I saw, I went on Netflix, and they had a new series, Nightfall. And I was like, oh, that sounds cool. I put it on. I was up to like 4 in the morning watching this shit.
Nice.
I was so tired today.
That's what I did with Bull.
Oh, yeah, Bull was good.
It's all Mike's fault. There's 3 seasons out, and I was like, oh, my. And then I stayed up until like 3:30, 4 o'clock watching episodes.
That's awesome. All right, next week we have a couple of books. We have Animosity Evolution number 9. We have Dead Kings number 2. Looking forward to that. And Patience, Conviction, Revenge number 4. So another good week next week.
Another good week.
Mm-hmm. You can, of course, find us all on the Twitter machine, at Rumbar316, at The Great Magnet, at Geekvine, at Aftershock Pod. Thanks for listening. Catch you on the next one.
Shock the world.